From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letson.
This is considered the Northeast, Mayfair section, actually. It's a nice little
Jessie Seren is a 28-year-old college grad. She lives in Philadelphia, where she rents a room in a neatly kept row house.
And this is my little kingdom.
In her room, there's just enough space to squeeze in her bed, her dressers, a nightstand.
I pay $400 a month for it. So, you know, it's kind of depressing going from...
Jessie doesn't envision herself here forever. Like a lot of people her age, she has big dreams for her future. Hers are right on her wall.
I have my dream vision board right here. I try to focus on this stuff every day.
Her vision board is a framed collage of clipped out images.
You know, relationships. I love John Legend and his wife. And I would love to have a relationship like that one day.
There are shots of romantic couples, cute kids.
Cute puppy.
A house, a pile of cash, a diamond ring. Tropical paradise.
Because I love to travel, and I feel like if I work hard, then I'll be blessed with those things.
The goals on the board surround one very important image.
Right in the middle, I have a fake bill of paid-off student loans that shows that the balance is $0 and that they're all repaid in full. So that's the main focus of my vision board, because I feel like once I do that, I'll have the freedom to travel, start a business, you know, start a family, whatever I want to do, but... Before a lot of these other things could happen, like, that needs to happen.
Student debt is redefining what's possible for a lot of Jessie's friends, too.
None of my, like, immediate close friends owns a home. Most of them from college don't have kids. None of them are married, you know, and I think student loans is a big factor in all of that. Who could afford a wedding? Who could afford a house? Who could afford a child?
Jessie graduated from a college right here in Philly, LaSalle University.
LaSalle was cool. I loved it. I really did enjoy college. It's a high price to pay for it. When I graduated LaSalle in 2010, 6 years ago, I came out owing $70,000.
But some of her loans had already started accruing interest, even while she was still in school. And in the years after school, the amount she owed went up even more.
And now, 6 years later, I owe $90,000. Approximately. And I've been making payments for the last 6 years.
So what happened? Well, after college, Jessie, like a lot of recent grads, took a string of low-paying jobs while she struggled to find her professional footing. She cleaned houses, peddled a bike taxi, worked in a cafe. She was even a mystery shopper. None of those jobs require a college degree, by the way. And during those years, she paid the bare minimum on her student loans.
I've never gone delinquent or anything like that. There's no late fees.
And when she couldn't afford to pay even the minimum, she would ask the loan companies to put her payments on hold for a while. A lot of people do that, and it sounds like a good deal when you're trying to make ends meet. But it makes things worse in the long run, because the interest keeps growing, and the amount you owe balloons.
When I reconsolidated years later, I had like an anxiety attack. I'm like crying. It just felt so hopeless. You know, my mom's like, she just felt so bad. She's like, I don't know what to tell you or what to do.
All told, she's paid tens of thousands of dollars in interest. That means she slipped backwards. Along the way, she's become fluent in the special language of student debt, terms like forbearance and consolidation. She's even made a YouTube video to warn other potential borrowers about the perils of student debt.
Hi, everyone. My name is Jessie, and I went to LaSalle University for 4 years. I'm still currently looking for a career in my field. And in the meantime, I've been living a hectic lifestyle, working multiple jobs in order to pay the minimum back on my student loans.
Now, she works in sales for a travel company that pays her on commission. She's still working a job that doesn't require a college degree, but now she can afford to pay more on her loans. Still, she has a few questions about her situation.
Like, why is the government lending out student loans at 8.5%? That's crazy. That's supposed to help us.
That's not happening anymore. But for student debtors like Jessie, it's too late. She's stuck paying 8% on about half of the money she owes. That's more than double the going interest rate for home loans today. Jessie's biggest question?
Where's the money going?
It's complicated because there's so much student debt out there. $1.3 trillion. That's larger than either credit card or auto loan debt. More than 42 million Americans have student debt right now. Unlike most of them, Jessie has someone stopping by today who can answer her questions about it.
Hi.
Hello there.
I'm Jesse, yeah.
Yes. Very nice to meet you, finally.
Nice to meet you.
How are you?
Jim Steele is one of the deans of investigative reporting in the United States. With Reveal's Lance Williams, in collaboration with Consumer Reports, he's looking into student loan debt. During this hour, he'll try to answer Jesse's big question.
Where's the money going?
Answering that question will take us to a private golf course in Maryland owned by someone who has made millions of dollars off students like Jesse, the people the program was set up to help.
This is the part of it the public does not understand. They know there's a lot of debt out there. They know a lot of young people are suffering. They know it has potential economic consequences for the country in terms of people not being able to start families, buy houses, all the normal things a young generation would do. They understand that, but they don't understand that there's this industry out there imposed by both private companies and to some extent the federal government itself.
The federal government started the student loan program to open the door to higher education for more young Americans. But over the decades, Jim tells Jesse, student loans have become something else.
Wasn't supposed to be a profit center for the government. Wasn't supposed to be a profit center for Wall Street or private equity companies. But this is what it's evolved into right now.
Now, the program is making things worse for some of the people it was designed to help, people like Jesse.
You still have this rock around your neck, but you have in fact paid $35,000, $40,000 already. It's not as though you've tried to shirk your responsibility.
I'm not asking for a handout. I'm just asking for it to be fair.
But for a generation of Americans, it isn't fair. Today, we follow Jesse's story and learn how student debt became the worst kind of debt for a borrower to have and the best kind for banks and debt collectors, and how just about everyone involved in the student loan industry today, even the federal government, makes money. They're making it off of one group of people, former students and their families, who borrowed the money to pay for college.
Now I'm seeing people that can't pay these loans and people that are in their 40s and 50s that are still paying them. They're still having trouble. And it's just like, is this what I have to look forward to? Like, holy crap, what did I get myself into, you know?
We'll follow the money trail when we come back on Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.
This is Eric Segarra. I'm a reporter at Reveal. It's officially fire season. Dozens of large wildfires are burning throughout the country, mostly in the Southwest, Southern California, and Alaska. There are more on the way. I've reported about wildfires for much of my career, and I've been investigating what makes them spread. Last year, they scorched 10.1 million acres, more than any other year since 1960. This year is on track to beat that record. Head over to revealnews.org to check out my reporting and learn more about what experts forecast for this year's fire season. I'll have new stories in the coming weeks. You won't miss any of it if you subscribe to Reveal's newsletter. You can sign up at revealnews.org/newsletter.
From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Edson. This hour, we're looking at student loan debt and how a public program to help students go to college became a way for private companies to make big money. To do that, we have to go back 50 years to when the program started with the highest of ideals. It was a part of President Lyndon Johnson's bold domestic agenda, the Great Society, that was supposed to eliminate poverty and racial injustice. Education was a big part of that. Journalist Jim Steele explains.
Johnson was a poor boy and had gone to school in a little college down in Texas, San Marcos. His vice president at the time said, LBJ is just a nut on education. So he believed in it very strongly, that we want to make this possible for people.
Under this new loan program.
Here's President Johnson talking about the student loan program in 1966.
Families will finance college education for their children in the same way that they finance the purchase of a home, through long-term, federally guaranteed private loans. For millions of families, the financial burden of college education will therefore now be lifted. New opportunities will open for American students.
Students like Jessie Seren. She's 28 years old and lives in Philly. She wears her long dark hair pulled back from her face, framed by large hoop earrings.
I grew up with my mom and my two sisters.
Jessie didn't know her father when she was a kid.
I was actually born and raised for 9 years in Scranton, PA. We moved around a lot there. I think we laugh about it in my family that we moved like 30 times or something like that, crazy. But my mom says she always had a legitimate reason to move. She never just moved just for the fun of it.
This is Jessie's personality. She's an optimist, always determined to stay positive. Her laughter is never far away, even when she's talking about serious stuff. She gets that from her mom, Mary Grace Howells, who brought up three daughters pretty much on her own.
Like, my part-time jobs were crazy, and I would do a lot of hours.
We went with Jessie to visit her mom at her little row house in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, the state capital.
Because it was mostly like in the restaurant business, bar business, and I might not get home till 5 o'clock in the morning. And then they'd be getting up.
Jessie's mom didn't go to college. She struggled to support Jessie and her two sisters alone.
She was a cake decorator at Giant for a little bit. She was a lifeguard at a pool. Like, these are not jobs where I would think now as an adult you could support three children. But somehow she always made it work. You know, I'd never remember like going hungry.
In elementary school, Jessie attended a free private boarding school for orphans and kids from poor families, founded by the late chocolate mogul Milton Hershey.
So everything was taken care of by the school. Your braces, your food, your clothes.
Jessie always did well in school. For her, college seemed not just possible, but inevitable. The path to a good job and all that comes with it.
Just seemed like, yeah, if you go to college, you could become successful. That's what you have to do. That's what you should do. And since I get good grades, it only made sense. Like, why would you not?
By her teens, Jessie attended a public school in Hershey that helped her with the college application process.
And then I did get accepted to Temple and LaSalle. And then, you know, now looking back, I say stupidly accepted to go to LaSalle because it was so much more expensive. You know, Temple was a state school and it would have been a lot less.
LaSalle University is a private Catholic college in Philadelphia. For Jessie, its urban campus felt like just the right size and setting. The price tag was steep, though, almost $40,000 a year for tuition, fees, and living expenses, she says. Jessie's mother knew she and her daughter were out of their depth.
Because I didn't know anything about how do you put somebody through school. I knew that I was not going to pay for it. I knew that probably before I even had them.
To go to LaSalle for one semester for spring 2007 cost a total of $18,150, and I received $10,962 in financial aid. So my balance left to pay LaSalle was $7,188. And, you know, when I got the bill like that, I mean, I thought that was so much money when I saw that. It was like, I would never be able to pay that. I have to get student loans to cover that. I don't have $7,000. My mom doesn't have $7,000 just to pay this.
I didn't know anything about it to the point that I thought I need help.
Help came from a small business in the neighborhood called Complete College Solutions. It was run by two guys, one of whom they recognized from the local swimming pool. So here's how it went down. Every semester, Jessie would get a bill showing how much she owed, and she'd fax it over to them.
I was just going from what they said, and there's this X amount of money that has to be paid, and it's not going to be covered by grants or scholarships. So they're telling me, okay, you take out loans for that. And, you know, so it was just kind of like, okay, yeah, sounds good.
I mean, it sounded like everything they were saying made sense, like they were doing everything that could possibly be done to make this work for her. And I trusted them because I didn't know any better. They were leading us to believe that she was going to be going the cheapest way possible.
After 4 years of college, Jessie's mom ended up paying them about $2,000. The company is out of business now. We called and emailed the former owner, but he didn't respond to our interview requests.
I think what they did was just tell us things that they thought that we wanted to hear and totally took advantage of the fact that, you know, we were both clueless. And to this day, that is definitely like a little thorn in my side.
They didn't scam us. They did what we paid them to do. I got the loans. I was able to get through college and have it paid the whole time. So that was what we paid them for. But it's just like, dang, maybe they could have, you know, warned us a little bit better or like said, hey, this is a lot of student loan debt. Do you know how much, you know, this is going to end up being?
No one was putting on the brakes, challenging Jessie about whether she was taking on more debt than she'd be able to pay back or whether the debt was worth it. So despite the grants and scholarships and work study, by the time Jesse graduated, she was more than $70,000 in debt. Now, this is in 2010, in the aftermath of the Great Recession. Job prospects in her field of study, criminal justice, weren't looking good.
I tried out with the Marshals. I applied for Border Patrol. I applied for TSA. You know, after the Marshals didn't work out, I was still trying to kind of go down that route of law enforcement, but none of them ever worked out.
Back home, living with her mom, Jesse knew she'd have to start making payments on her loan soon. So she ended up taking a gig close to home for $12.50 an hour.
It was just this huge, huge room, probably like the size of half a football field. And it was just rows and rows and rows and rows and rows of people that worked just like me on the phone, taking calls and making calls.
Jesse and all those other people on the phones were talking with student debtors like her about their loans.
I was working at American Education Services, and I was just on the phones in the asset maintenance department collecting on delinquent student loans.
She remembers a script by heart.
Welcome to American Education Services. My name is Jesse. Can I please verify some information before we start talking? And then you'd verify their name, address, email, date of birth, ask them if it's okay to contact them on the auto dialer.
This is where Jesse got her real education in the way student loans work.
I knew that this is invaluable information for me. I need to really pay attention. So I was grateful, but also then as I started working there and doing the phone calls and hearing people's stories, that's when it got scary. Now I'm seeing people that can't pay these loans and people that are in their 40s and 50s that are still paying them. They're still having trouble. And it's just like, is this what I have to look forward to? Like, holy crap, what did I get myself into, you know? I felt like I was working for the enemy.
Jesse started to fear that one day she'd end up on the other side of those phone calls. This wasn't some trumped up anxiety. At the time she was working at American Education Services, she was also making some of her debt payments to them.
I owed them about $380 a month, and I was making about $980 every 2 weeks after taxes and my paycheck. So it was kind of funny. I was just paying them right back. You know, it was like they gave me the money, and then I gave it right back to them. And if I didn't, I could be fired.
This wasn't the only place she was paying. Like many student debtors, over her years in college, Jesse had taken out a mix of private and federal loans. It was sometimes hard to tell which were which, but a big chunk of them originally came from Sallie Mae, a company started by the federal government. Today, Sallie Mae is a multi-billion dollar company that was practically synonymous with student loans. It led the transformation of the industry from a sleepy federal program into a roaring profit center for Wall Street. In 2014, Sallie Mae spun off most of its student loan business into a new company, Navient. There's a lot of confusion among borrowers about Sallie Mae. We're going to unravel the whole backstory.
It's almost intentionally impenetrable, so nobody can kind of figure it out.
That's journalist Jim Steele again. During his 50-year career, he's won two Pulitzer Prizes. But he tells Jesse student loans are among the most complex subjects he's ever tackled. Sallie Mae began under the Nixon administration as a part of a government effort to free up more money for college students.
And originally, it was a very restrictive thing. It was a quasi-government agency, public-private partnership.
We called on someone else to help us tell this part of the story.
I'm Robert Shireman. I'm a senior fellow at the Century Foundation, which is a progressive think tank based in New York City.
For decades, Robert has been working on student loan issues and access to college and government and nonprofits. He met us on a noisy plaza on the University of California, Berkeley campus, where he explains what Sallie Mae originally was.
The idea was that if some company would buy the loans from the banks could make the loans, and then this purchaser could then take responsibility for collecting on the loans over time. So Sallie Mae was created as what people called a secondary market, and it's like Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, which operate in the mortgage realm. Sallie Mae was the student loan equivalent of that.
Jim Steele says the government set up this secondary market to help more students get loans.
Sallie Mae would buy these loans from banks, and that would free up more money, so more loans could be made to potential students.
And it worked. But over time, people started getting worried about how much Sallie Mae and the banks were profiting off the student loan program. Maybe the U.S. could save students money by cutting out the middleman, Sallie Mae and the banks, and just loan students money directly from the government. In 1993, President Bill Clinton pushed a plan through Congress to do just that.
The direct loan program gets rid of red tape, bypasses banks and middlemen, sends the student loan directly to the school where the student gets it in a hurry.
The goal was to save billions while offering lower interest rates. Seemed like a win-win, but not to everyone. Sallie Mae and the banks freaked out. Now they'd have to compete with the government, which could make loans at lower interest rates without worrying about turning a profit. In 1994, the Republicans won control of Congress. They saw Clinton's direct loan program as a needless expansion of big government, and they tried to kill it. But Clinton fought back and won, sort of.
This program is better for the students, better for the schools, and believe it or not, it costs the taxpayers less money. It has been a good investment for America, and I thank...
But that victory came as a result of a compromise. Republicans wanted to change Sallie Mae from a public-private partnership to a fully private company, and they got Clinton to agree. Again, here's Robert Shireman, our higher education public policy guy.
I think a lot of people look back on that transaction and think, well, it was a good idea, but we cut a bad deal and gave them too much. Certainly one of the things that Sallie Mae got in their deal when they were privatized was the ability to keep using that name, Sallie Mae. Giving them the name Sallie Mae and that sort of continued impression that people have of their connection to the government.
That impression made regular people, students, families, trust the company and think that Sallie Mae existed to help them. But Jim Steele says Sallie Mae's private status changed the game.
It could issue federal loans. It could bundle those loans and sell them as bonds to investors if they wanted. So in addition to issuing these loans, Sallie Mae began to buy servicing companies that administered them. And then the next step, they began to buy debt collection companies. So if somebody fell down on their payments to a Sallie loan, you heard from another Sallie Mae company demanding payment of them.
Best of all for Sallie Mae, it could do all of this with little risk of failure.
So while it operated like a private business, its whole business model was based on a federal guarantee, which made it almost a fail-safe operation.
That's a lot for Jesse to take in.
I feel like you need a degree in financing and economics just to really wrap your head around all of that.
There was competition. Clinton's direct loan program remained an option for needy students. But Sallie Mae figured out a way to deal with that. The company launched an incentive-laden marketing program to convince colleges that they should work with Sallie Mae.
They actually extended all kinds of perks to college aid officials, tours, golf outings, cruises.
The government was in no position to wine and dine colleges. The Department of Education didn't have a budget to entertain financial aid officers with free cruises on the Potomac. Sallie Mae did more than that. After 1996, the company paid colleges to drop out of the federal program and sign up with Sallie Mae as the campus student loan provider. It paid college financial loan officers to serve as consultants on Sallie Mae's advisory boards.
They even had Sallie Mae people in call centers where students would call for advice on, should I get this Sallie Mae loan or should I do something over here? And guess what happened there?
The federal program couldn't compete. Along the way, Sallie Mae also became a powerful force in Washington. Federal records show that since 1997, the company has spent more than $44 million lobbying Congress, the President, and the Department of Education on hundreds of measures that could affect their business.
So you had all kinds of things resulting from the privatization. Tremendously strengthened Sallie Mae, made it a real go-go company on Wall Street. There's a lot of money to be made here. So a whole series of other companies, hedge funds, private equity companies, banks that hadn't even been involved in this thing, suddenly surge into the field from the late 90s on.
Between 2010 and 2013, Sallie Mae's profits alone topped $3.5 billion. Jesse gets it.
They've literally reversed the whole idea of helping students and turned it into a business right underneath all of our noses without anyone even really realizing, like, wow, you know, here's people making a lot of money off of this.
That's exactly right. Can't say it any better than that.
At the same time, the demand for student loans was rising. Middle-class income stagnated while college costs soared. States slashed funding for public colleges, and that placed more of the burden for paying for state college on their students.
The same student who once found a lot of their education in effect paid for by the state, now they got to get a loan to cover that So it's a huge tidal shift in what education costs and who's had to pick up the tab.
Cutting state funding for colleges came at a tremendous cost to students. We calculated that if states had continued to support public education at the same rate as 35 years ago, they would have invested an additional $500 billion in their university systems. That's about the same amount that graduates of public universities now owe for their college loans. Today, student loan debt is a $140 billion a year industry, and its future looks bright, unlike the futures of many of its student customers. We still haven't fully answered Jesse's original question.
Where's the money going?
To show us where a chunk of that money went, Jim Steele took us on a drive in rural Maryland.
I'm not sure how fast you could go on this road if in something other than a Maserati, but probably about 35 or 40 miles. I mean, it's just very curvy. Lots of big farms set back from the road. Trees everywhere. Not so much a forest, but very woodsy. And now I believe, yes, this is it. It starts right here. We're here at the edge of a golf course. But this isn't just any old golf course. This is a private golf course. I don't mean private club, I mean private golf course, built by one man for himself and a handful of his associates and friends. His name is Albert Lord. Albert Lord was for many years the driving force behind Sallie Mae, the colossus of the student loan industry. Everybody I've talked to about him, sort of a tall, impressive fellow, very smooth-talking, approachable, obviously very driven. But he actually comes from a very humble background. His father was a linotype operator for a newspaper. Lord himself went to Penn State University, got a degree in accounting, and it was from that that he worked his way up.
Lord worked at Sallie Mae for more than 30 years. He built the company into a financial giant. He took control when he pushed his way up to the top in 1997.
Lord won proxy battle for the board of directors, and as a result of that, he became CEO. And that's when he began putting it all together. Various loans, the servicing, buying the other companies, becoming the monolith that it became in the whole student loan field.
Lord was extremely well paid for making the most of this newly privatized industry. In one five-year period, he pulled in $200 million. He could be a testy character, even for a CEO. Here he is taking questions from analysts and tangling with them on a conference call that the Wall Street Journal predicted would live in infamy.
This is the last question I answer that's more than one part.
That's Lord. He's just warming up.
You're talking to the wrong guy. I don't know that answer.
Eventually, he starts deflecting questions to a colleague.
You should give Steve a call.
But you're the CEO. You're the guy who just took over the company.
That's exactly right. I'm the CEO. You should give Steve a call. Next question.
Finally, after he's bent all the analysts into submission, there's silence.
Steve, let's go. No questions. Let's get the out of here.
This is a golf course that you can't go up and pay green fees and play on. This isn't the kind of golf course that you can even apply for membership in. Albert Lord was so successful with Sallie Mae. It provided him the kind of wherewithal that you could build something like this. I mean, it's one thing to join a private club and perhaps plunk down $200,000 or $300,000, which is what the very best ones apparently easily command. But this is a multi-million dollar undertaking. Exactly how much, none of us know.
Albert Lord retired in 2013.
We asked Mr. Lord in an email if he would comment on the privatization of Sallie Mae and numerous other things related to it. He declined to be interviewed, but he did send us a rather lengthy email. The tenor of the questions you have asked lead me to conclude not to undermine my retirement peace. The government has put the American taxpayer at risk for every dime of the $1.3 trillion you referenced in your note to me. You would do well to study the geometric growth of government underwritten student debt, now greater than $100 billion per year.
It goes on like that for a while, and what he's basically saying here is that the American taxpayer is the real victim of the student loan crisis.
So the bee got under my bonnet, and I've said more than I intended. He may publish all of this note or none. I shall now return to my newfound peace. Be well. Al Lord. It's part of that eternal debate in the U.S. Is private industry more capable of handling certain programs than government? And I think what we see here for sure is that private industry has made a lot of money off this guaranteed program in a way that's not always served the interests of the students.
Students like Jessie, who have never heard of Albert Lord, after a visit to the golf course, Jim shows her a video of the place.
Here we go. This should be the video.
Looks like a secluded area.
Yeah. There's not even a name showing what this thing is. It's just a driveway leading up to this multi-million dollar facility that he and his buddies can play golf at. So for him, the student loan industry has been a very profitable route.
Absolutely. It's like the golf course made of students' tears and sweat. But to know that he kind of started from, you know, being a normal person, I respect that. You know, he was smart and made wise investments and smart business decisions. So for that reason, I can't be mad at him. You know, I hope to be able to do my own business one day that could be just as successful. But if he has all this power now, maybe he could kind of turn the corner. He's been successful, maybe into helping students and getting it back to what this originally was all for, to help people get an education, to make America better, to make students our next generation of business owners, homeowners, you know, families. That's the point, and we're destroying that.
So what's next for Jessie? When we come back, she hunts for an escape hatch from her student debt.
Let me tell you what I've been through when it come to Sally. She called me at least twice a day. She want our money badly. Calling me from different numbers. Ooh, she thinks she's slick. But I got them all memorized. I hit ignore quick. Needed tuition. Needed room and board. Had to pay for books. So I took out loans to feed the board. Graduated. Wasn't made.
This is Reveal. From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.
That's my Equifax. I ain't proud of that. I'm more proud of that. I ain't drowning that. I got two jobs, really got on my grind. No time to whine. I can't ride the pine in the game right now. My time to shine. Started paying them loans back one at a time. Got them down, 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 till I paid them all off. Peace sign. For those who doubted me, yeah, this is payback. And I've been on my grizzly, yeah, since way back. No, sir.
Hey listeners, Bayard Duncan here. If you want an easy way to connect with our newsroom, give Reveal a follow on Twitter. It's a good way to stay up to date on our investigations, get insights from our reporters, and more. We're always listening if you have questions about the show or tips we should look into. To join the conversation, you can find us on Twitter at Reveal. Why not give us a follow right now while you're listening? Again, that's at Reveal.
From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Ledson. This hour, we've been digging into how a federal program to help disadvantaged students go to college became a money-making machine for Wall Street. 28-year-old Jessie Seren has helped us tell this story. She's in so much debt, her adult life is pretty much on hold. Now we're visiting her alma mater.
We're on our way to LaSalle University. It's kind of like the Germantown area of Philadelphia.
Jessie drives around LaSalle's campus that spreads over a bunch of city blocks. Within its gates, there are a lot of winding sidewalks full of diverse students, trees, and lots of places to sit.
LaSalle, like, I always thought was like the picture perfect, like, college. It's just what I imagined college was when I was younger because of the old buildings and the brick buildings and things, and I haven't been back really since I graduated.
That was six long years and many dreams ago.
Well, down here is like the main area of the campus, so that would probably be a good like spot.
Jessie heads for a bench in the middle of the quad. These days, she looks beyond the pretty old buildings to the students and the loans they're taking out to come here.
It's definitely crazy to think about that. Like, I did not think about student loans when I was walking around on campus. I'm sure most of these kids right now, like, if you ask them about their loans, they'd probably be like, I don't know, you know. Well, hopefully they know something, but I doubt that they do.
She says she didn't know. A couple months after she graduated, Jessie finally tallied everything she owed.
And at that time, it was probably with about $70,000 student debt. And now that's grown up to the $90,000. So as I sit here 6 years later on the bench, you know, $20,000 more in debt, even though I've been paying.
Now, all she wants to do is warn the students she sees.
Yeah, I wish I could just grab everyone right now. Just like, how much have you taken out? Everybody, let's take a group meeting right now. If you're taking out like more than $10,000 in loans, don't do it. Like, think about your future, you know?
Jessie took out some of her loans from Sallie Mae, which has been a giant in the student loan industry. That company made millions in profits off students like her. But loan companies aren't the only ones that make money from the $1.3 trillion of student debt in the U.S. The loan programs that are supposed to help disadvantaged students pay for college tuition have also become a way for the federal government to make money. Here's how it works. When the government makes a student loan, it charges more than it needs to break even. Senator Elizabeth Warren says the government charges more than it should.
At least twice as much. We'll be charging at least twice as much as we need to charge to cover the costs of the loans.
That's Warren questioning James Runcie of the U.S. Department of Education at a 2014 hearing.
So when we set interest rates higher than we need to cover the costs, that generates revenue for the government. My question, Mr. Runcie, is where do those profits go? Do they get refunded back to the students who paid more than was necessary for the cost of their loans, or are they just used to fund government generally?
Senator Warren, they do not. They're used to fund government generally. They do not come back specifically into the program.
All right. Yeah. So that's the key point I wanted to make here. It seems to me we're just taxing students for the privilege of borrowing money to try to get an education. I think that's obscene. I don't think the student loan program should be designed so that it's making profits for the federal government.
So how much money are we talking about? Well, the Government Accountability Office reports the loans the government made just between 2007 and 2012 will generate $66 billion in profits by the time borrowers pay them off. By the Department of Education's own calculations, the government earns, in some years, as much as 20% on each loan. Warren isn't the only person outraged about the government making money off of student debt. It seems to be one of the few issues that she and presidential hopeful Donald Trump can agree on.
Student debt is a tremendous problem in the United States. Right now, it's not fair. It's one of the only places, frankly, where our country actually makes money, and they make a lot of money, and that should not take place. We're going to make it really good for the student.
And Trump's main rival for the White House, Hillary Clinton, agrees.
I don't think the federal government should be making money off of lending you money to get your education.
So companies like Sallie Mae and the government have profited as college graduates have buckled under their debt burdens. High interest rates are part of what makes it so tough to get out from under these loans. That's a big reason Jessie's loans have ballooned to $90,000. She says she can't figure out how to move forward with her life.
I don't see me settling down anytime soon. I don't want to buy a house because I can't imagine signing my name to any more debt, even though that's what, you know, you're supposed to do. But I couldn't do it. I just see my sisters, you know, they just had kids, and I see how much they pay in daycare. I feel like having children is not an option for me, you know. It would be really irresponsible for me to have kids right now. You know, so there's so many different things that you have to think about because of this debt. I can't take the risks that, you know, I would normally take and do different things.
she'd love to get some kind of debt relief. The idea seems simple.
I don't really have any other debt, or I don't have credit card debt, you know, besides my car and my student loans. Those are the only things I owe.
But student loans are nearly impossible to escape. If other kind of debts take over your life, medical debt, business debt, whatever, you can file for bankruptcy protection and get a fresh start. With student loan debt, bankruptcy is almost never an option, even for private student loans. This puts all the risk on students taking out loans and away from companies lending the money. That makes it the worst kind of debt for a borrower and the best kind for a lender.
People shouldn't face crushing debt to get an education.
That's Jerry Nadler, a congressman from New York. For more than 7 years, he fought in vain to stop an industry-backed overhaul of the nation's bankruptcy laws.
It's a multi-million dollar campaign, and we were totally outgunned.
Nadler's battle began around 1998 with the Bankruptcy Reform Act, which dealt with all kinds of debt.
The propaganda was from all these phony studies, from all these think tanks, hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of studies, and all we had on the other side was a Harvard law professor talking to us quietly behind the scenes named Elizabeth Warren, who was telling us what was really true.
Almost unnoticed, a measure slipped into the bill that was worth a fortune to the student loan industry.
People weren't really focused on the student debt thing at the time. They were focused on the credit cards.
It banned bankruptcy relief for private student loans. There was precedent for that.
It was already the case that student debt was not dischargeable in bankruptcy. That is to say, you couldn't wipe it out by becoming bankrupt.
He's talking about federal loans. Bankruptcy for those loans had gradually been phased out. The idea was to protect taxpayers from students who flaked out on their loans. In the bill, lawmakers from both parties approved a measure that kept borrowers from declaring bankruptcy on private student loans.
Well, it was a terrible thing. We should have gone in the other direction instead of making it even tighter. And in retrospect, it certainly should have been a bigger piece of the debate.
Robert Shireman, a higher ed policy guy who worked on student loans for decades, remembers this too.
That student loan provision in the bankruptcy bill is a good example where years after it happened, people were saying that it was some kind of nefarious middle of the night kind of thing. And I went back and I looked at the record and it wasn't. It was just nobody was paying attention who was sort of thinking it all through. And it happened and nobody opposed it. And then it was part of that bill and we've been stuck with it ever since.
So the 42 million Americans with student loans are stuck with them too. Debtors who get overwhelmed can't just stop paying. Student loan collections are aggressive. Jessie knows that from her time working for a student debt collection outfit. Sometimes debt collectors don't just go after students. They go after their parents or other relatives who have co-signed these loans or even taken them out in their own name. To collect on student loans, the government can garnish your tax refund, your military pension, even your Social Security check. Jessie has another reason for being diligent and always making her payments on time. She's not just worried about herself.
You're not just getting one loan. You know, you're getting a bunch of different loans, and it adds up to be a lot.
As she took out loans all through college, semester by semester, Jessie saved the documents in a huge stack of paper.
So here's some of the original ones. Federal Plus Loan Application and Promissory Note.
Most of the loans are not just in her name. Her aunt co-signed on some, and a lot are in her mom's name.
So this one is actually fully in her name, and this was $11,845.
I don't worry about it at all that my name is on that. I definitely do not.
Jessie's mom, Mary Grace Howells, protected her from knowing how bad off they were when she was growing up. Now, Jessie is protecting her mother from this mountain of debt. Jessie makes payments, about $500 a month, just for the loans under her mom's name. Her mom doesn't even keep track of the amounts.
Usually I go home and my mom has just a pile of these letters from Fed Loan that she just won't even open them. She's like, here, what do you want me to do with these? I'm the one that handles it.
Thank God, because I wouldn't know how to. I wouldn't know the first thing about doing it. So I thank God that she is for that responsible, because that is a lot on the table.
Okay, so the balance now at this current time, April 20th, 2016, is $45,592.
That's what her mom still owes.
It's kind of scary because I know, like, if I did ever have kids or something, there might be a time where I have to make that choice of, you know, am I going to ruin my mom's credit or am I going to feed my kids? And I don't really want to be in that position ever, but I feel like it's inevitable.
For now, Jessie has dealt with the situation by pressing the pause button on her adult life, or to be more precise, putting it in storage here in her mom's house.
So we're going to go upstairs now and see my old bedroom, which no longer looks like a bedroom, but more like a storage unit. It has all the things from my old apartment in there that, you know, couldn't fit in my bedroom in Philadelphia.
Jessie now lives in Philly in a room she rents. But before that, for 1 year, she had her own place in a town near Harrisburg.
I had the cutest, little, nicest apartment. I loved living there. I loved being on my own and feeling independent and just being able to, you know, cook whenever I want and clean on my own schedule, not get yelled at for leaving a cup in the sink or something, you know. It was just really, like, a great place. And I felt like I was, like, progressing in life. Like, yeah, you know, like, I'm moving on.
Jessie's mom helped her furnish the place, a couch, cookware, curtains for every window.
And, I mean, we did a great job at yard selling and finding bargain stuff. I think we got this table from Salvation Army. It was like $20 or something like that.
It's a really cute apartment. So there's all of her clothes and there's... And what's back there? What was that table? Oh, your desk?
My kitchen table, my desk.
But she couldn't afford it. There was no way Jessie could pay off her loans, $900 each month, and keep the apartment. So she gave it up. She and her mom lugged everything back up here to her old bedroom.
Yeah, so it was a lot of hard work and effort and time that's in this room right here for nothing right now.
Here we were, and of course, heartbroken, but we kind of made light of it and be like, here we are again, bringing it all back up. And it was in August. It was like the hottest day.
I don't know if I'm ever going to have that again. Like I said, I don't know if I'll ever be stable enough for a coffee table. Like, I don't see that.
This room, this is what really gets to Jessie's mom. Not the dollar amounts or how hard Jessie will have to work to pay them off. Just looking at this pile of stuff, she gets choked up.
I just worry and feel bad for her because of this. Not, you know, having to live in a room and everything else that you own in another room, you know? Can't get ahead. Just trying to keep her head above water just makes it so that she's just existing day by day to do not see any, like, what light do you see in front? Like, there's no, the tunnel is just so long and so dark. When is the light going to come at the end of the tunnel so you see your way out? I think it's just years and years to come.
Jessie says she doubts her present job selling vacation packages will cut it over the long run, even though she's consistently paying her loans.
I've definitely taken responsibility and I'm making the payments. By the time it's said and done, I will have paid like almost triple or quadruple what I've taken out. So I'd say that's, you know, more than fair. Yeah, it's not fair. It's like, it's too much.
So Jessie has a plan B, sort of a Hail Mary pass to get rid of all this student debt.
Right now I have this opportunity. I have some friends in Panama and they really want me to go down there and start a business with them.
I mean, there's a million people making a lot of money. Why can't we?
It's kind of a crazy idea. Her mom is in on the plan.
I said to her, do the research. This is your gig, but I'm willing to help, you know, and I can retire from my job, so at least I'd still have income coming in.
So my business idea is to start a tour company, but a catchy name for it is the Booze Cruise. So it would just be taking, you know, folks out, doing like a little, you know, 5-hour sunset or sunrise, maybe a little bit after sunrise, but tour where you have food and drinks included, snorkeling, some fishing.
Jessie's already scouted out the location on an island off the coast of Panama. She has some friends who run a little hotel and want to help.
And there's no shortage of tourists on the islands, you know. Hopefully the dream would be that we'd be successful enough to do it, you know, 9 months or 10 months out of the year, that during the off seasons when it's kind of rainier, that we'd be able to travel. So, and that would be like my dream lifestyle come true.
And I do believe that would be a way, at least potentially, to get this monkey off of the back forever. And that's going to be a great day. Cha-ching! Get rid of those damn loans after all.
One of our big schemes is going to work out. Like, our business, sell the house, I don't know, write a good book. One of these things is going to make it happen.
Absolutely. You have to have faith. Keep the faith going.
If Jessie keeps paying at the rate she is now, it will take almost 15 years for her to pay off her student loans. It may be too late for Jessie, but the Obama administration has taken steps towards reform. It has eliminated the financial middlemen who long collected fees to issue federal loans. And even though private companies continue to administer the loans, the government now loans directly to students. Still, the basic system remains in place. Contractors with little oversight have an incentive to profit by collecting as much as they can from student debtors. The more we spoke to people about their debt, the more we realized that just about everyone has a story. And this week, we're collecting yours. Using the hashtag MyDebtCouldBuy on Twitter and on Instagram, share something that you could get with all the debt you owe. Maybe it's a new car, maybe 2,500 cups of coffee, anything. Make sure to include the dollar amount of your debt and a photo of what you'd rather have for all that money. We'll collect all your responses and include our favorites on our website and in our weekly newsletter. We can't wait to see what you come up with. And again, that's hashtag MyDebtCouldBuy. Promotional support for Reveal comes from the new podcast, Her Money with Jean Chatsky, created to empower women to live better by focusing on their finances. Whether you're a woman yourself or you have a woman in your life that you care about, you should take a listen. Her Money features great interviews with inspiring women, from Gretchen Rubin to Arianna Huffington. Learn about earning more, saving more, investing wisely, and building the financial life you want. You can find Her Money on iTunes, Stitcher, or at jeanchatsky.com. This week's show was reported by Jim Steele and Lance Williams, with editing from Andy Donahue as a part of our collaboration with Consumer Reports. You can read their full story on our website at revealnews.org and other student debt coverage at consumerreports.org. Catherine Miskowski was our lead producer this week, with help from Laura Starcheski. Cheryl Duvall edited our show. Julia B. Chan produced our digital content. Paul Veitkis mixed this week's show. Our sound design team is the Wonder Twins, my man, Jay Breezy, Mr. Jim Briggs, and Claire C. Note Mullen. Our head of studio is Krista Scharfenberg, and Amy Powell is our editor-in-chief. Suzanne Reber is our executive editor, and our executive producer is Kevin Sullivan. Our theme music is by Camarado, Lightning. Support for Reveal is provided by the Reeve and David Logan Foundation, the Ford Foundation, the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, and the Ethics and Excellence in Journalism Foundation. Reveal is a co-production of the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX. I'm Al Letson, and remember, there is always more to the story. We